Fourth act. Scene. Same as act two. Lord Goring is standing by the fireplace with his hands in his pockets. He is looking rather bored. He pulls out his watch, inspects it, and rings the bell.
It is a great nuisance. I can't find anyone in this house to talk to. And I am full of interesting information. I feel like the latest edition of, something or other.
Enter servant.
Sir Robert is still at the Foreign Office, my lord.
Lady Chiltern not down yet?
Her ladyship has not yet left her room. Miss Chiltern has just come in from riding.
To himself.
Ah, that is something.
Lord Caversham has been waiting some time in the library for Sir Robert. I told him your lordship was here.
Thank you. Would you kindly tell him I've gone?
Bowing.
I shall do so, my lord.
Exit servant.
Really, I don't want to meet my father 3 days running. It is a great deal too much excitement for any son. I hope to goodness he won't come up. Fathers should neither be seen nor heard. That is the only proper basin for family life. Mothers are different. Mothers are darlings.
Throws himself down into a chair, picks up a paper, and begins to read it. Enter Lord Caversham.
Well, sir, what are you doing here? Wasting your time as usual, I suppose?
Throws down paper and rises.
My dear father, when one pays a visit, it is for the purpose of wasting other people's time, not one's own.
Have you been thinking over what I spoke to you about last night?
I have been thinking of nothing else.
Engaged to be married yet?
Genially.
Not yet. But I hope to be before lunchtime.
Caustically.
You can have till dinner time if it would be of any convenience to you.
Thanks, awfully. But I think I'd sooner be engaged before lunch.
Never know when you are serious or not.
Neither do I, father.
A pause.
I suppose you have read the Times this morning?
Airily.
The Times? Certainly not. I only read the Morning Post. All that one should know about modern life is where the duchesses are. Anything else is quite demoralizing.
Do you mean to say you have not read the Times' leading article on Robert Chiltern's career?
Good heavens, no. What does it say?
What should it say, sir? Everything complimentary, of course. Chiltern's speech last night on this Argentine canal scheme was one of the finest pieces of oratory ever delivered in the House since Canning.
Ah, never heard of Canning. Never wanted to, and did Chiltern uphold the scheme?
Uphold it, sir? How little you know him. Why, he denounced it roundly, and the whole system of modern political finance. This speech is the turning point in his career, as the Times points out. You should read this article, sir.
Opens the Times.
Sir Robert Chiltern, most rising of our young statesmen, brilliant orator, unblemished career, well-known integrity of character, represents what is best in English public life, noble contrast to the lax morality among foreign politicians. They will never say that of you, sir.
I sincerely hope not, father. However, I am delighted at what you tell me about Robert, thoroughly delighted. It shows he has got pluck.
He has got more than pluck, sir. He has got genius.
Ah, I prefer pluck. It is not so common nowadays as genius is.
I wish you would go into Parliament.
My dear father, only people who look dull ever get into the House of Commons, and only people who are dull ever succeed there.
Why don't you try to do something useful in life?
I am far too young.
Testily.
I hate this affectation of youth, sir. It is a great deal too prevalent nowadays.
Youth isn't an affectation. Youth is an art.
Why don't you propose to that pretty Miss Chiltern?
I am of a very nervous disposition, especially in the morning.
I don't suppose there's the smallest chance of her accepting you.
I don't know how the betting stands today.
If she did accept you, she would be the prettiest fool in England.
That is just what I should like to marry. A thoroughly sensible wife would reduce me to a condition of absolute idiocy in less than 6 months.
You don't deserve her, sir.
My dear father, if we men married the women we deserved, we should have a very bad time of it.
Enter Mabel Chiltern.
Oh, how do you do, Lord Caversham? I hope Lady Caversham is quite well.
Lady Caversham is as usual as usual.
Good morning, Miss Mabel.
Taking no notice at all of Lord Goring, and addressing herself exclusively to Lord Caversham.
And Lady Caversham's bonnets, are they at all better?
They've had a serious relapse, I'm sorry to say.
Good morning, Miss Mabel.
To Lord Caversham.
I hope an operation will not be necessary.
Smiling at her pertness.
If it is, we shall have to give Lady Caversham a narcotic. Otherwise, she'll never consent to have a single feather touched.
With increased emphasis.
Good morning, Miss Mabel.
Turning round with feigned surprise.
Oh, are you here? Of course you understand that after breaking your appointment, I am never going to speak to you again.
Oh, please don't say such a thing. You are the one person in London I really like to have to listen to me.
Lord Goring, I never believe a single word that either you or I say to each other.
You are quite right, my dear. Quite right. As far as he is concerned, I mean.
Do you think you could possibly make your son behave a little better occasionally, just as a change?
I regret to say, Miss Chiltern, I have no influence over my son. I wish I had. If I had, I know what I would make him do.
I am afraid that he has one of those terribly weak natures that are not susceptible to influence.
He is very heartless. Very heartless.
It seems to me that I am a little in the way here.
It is very good for you to be in the way, and to know what people say of you behind your back.
I don't at all like knowing what people say of me behind my back. It makes me far too conceited.
After that, my dear, I really must bid you good morning.
Oh, I hope you are not going to leave me all alone with Lord Goring, especially at such an early hour in the day.
I am afraid I can't take him to Downing Street. It is not the Prime Minister's day for seeing the unemployed.
Shakes hands with Mabel Chiltern, takes up his hat and stick and goes out, with a parting glare of indignation at Lord Goring. Takes up roses and begins to arrange them in a bowl on the table.
People who don't keep their appointments in the park are horrid.
Detestable.
I am glad you admit it, but I wish you wouldn't look so pleased about it.
I can't help it. I always look pleased when I am with you.
Sadly.
Then I suppose it is my duty to remain with you.
Of course it is.
Well, my duty is a thing I never do on principle. It always depresses me, so I'm afraid I must leave you.
Please don't, Miss Mabel. I have something very particular to say to you.
Rapturously.
Oh, is it a proposal?
Somewhat taken aback.
Well, yes, it is. I am bound to say it is.
With a sigh of pleasure.
I am so glad. That makes the second today.
Indignantly.
The second? Today? What conceited ass has been impertinent enough to dare to propose to you before I had proposed to you?
Tommy Trafford, of course. It is one of Tommy's days for proposing. He always proposes on Tuesdays and Thursdays during the season.
Oh, you didn't accept him, I hope.
I make it a rule never to accept Tommy. That is why he goes on proposing. Of course, as you didn't turn up this morning, I very nearly said yes. It would have been an excellent lesson both for him and for you if I had. It would have taught you both better manners.
Oh, bother Tommy Trafford. Tommy is a silly little ass. I love you.
I know, and I think you might have mentioned it before. I am sure I have given you heaps of opportunities.
Mabel, do be serious. Please, be serious.
Ah, that is the sort of thing a man always says to a girl before he has been married to her. He never says it afterwards.
taking hold of her hand.
"Mabel, I have told you that I love you. Can't you love me a little in return?"
"You silly Arthur. If you knew anything about anything, which you don't, you would know that I adore you. Everyone in London knows it, except you. It is a public scandal the way I adore you. I have been going about for the last 6 months telling the whole of society that I adore you. I wonder you consent to have anything to say to me. I have no character left at all. At least I feel so happy that I am quite sure I have no character left at all."
Catches her in his arms and kisses her. Then there is a pause of bliss.
"Dear, do you know I was awfully afraid of being refused?"
Looking up at him.
"But you never have been refused yet by anybody, have you, Arthur? I can't imagine anyone refusing you."
After kissing her again.
"Of course I'm not nearly good enough for you, Mabel."
Nestling close to him.
"I am so glad, darling. I was afraid you were."
After some hesitation.
"And I'm a little over 30.
"Dear, you look weeks younger than that."
Enthusiastically.
"How sweet of you to say so. And it is only fair to tell you frankly that I am fearfully extravagant."
"But so am I, Arthur, so we're sure to agree. And now I must go and see Gertrude."
"Must you really?"
Kisses her.
"Yes."
"Then do tell her I want to talk to her particularly. I have been waiting here all the morning to see either her or Robert."
"Do you mean to say you didn't come here expressly to propose to me?"
Triumphantly.
"No, that was a flash of genius."
"Your first?"
With determination.
"My last."
"I am delighted to hear it. Now, don't stir. I'll be back in 5 minutes. And don't fall into any temptations while I am away."
"Dear Mabel, while you are away, there are none. It makes me horribly dependent on you."
Enter Lady Chiltern.
"Good morning, dear. How pretty you are looking."
"How pale you are looking, Gertrude. It is most becoming."
"Good morning, Lord Goring."
Bowing.
"Good morning, Lady Chiltern."
Aside to Lord Goring.
"I shall be in the conservatory, under the second palm tree on the left."
"Second on the left?"
With a look of mock surprise.
"Yes, the usual palm tree."
Blows a kiss to him, unobserved by Lady Chiltern, and goes out.
"Lady Chiltern, I have a certain amount of very good news to tell you. Mrs. Cheeveley gave me up Robert's letter last night, and I burned it. Robert is safe."
Sinking on the sofa.
"Safe? Oh, I am so glad of that. What a good friend you are to him. To us."
"There is only one person now that could be said to be of any danger."
"Who is that?"
Sitting down beside her.
"Yourself."
"I? In danger? What do you mean?"
"Danger is too great a word. It is a word I should not have used. But I admit I have something to tell you that may distress you, that terribly distresses me. Yesterday evening you wrote me a very beautiful womanly letter, asking me for my help. You wrote to me as one of your oldest friends, one of your husband's oldest friends. Mrs. Cheeveley stole that letter from my rooms."
"Well, what use is it to her? Why should she not have it?"
Rising.
"Lady Chiltern, I will be quite frank with you. Mrs. Cheeveley puts a certain construction on that letter and proposes to send it to your husband."
"But what construction could she put on it?" "Oh, not that, not that. If I am in trouble and wanting your help, trusting you, propose to come to you, that you may advise me, assist me. Oh, are there women so horrible as that? And she proposes to send it to my husband? Tell me what happened. Tell me all that happened."
Mrs. Cheveley was concealed in a room adjoining my library, without my knowledge. I thought that the person who was waiting in that room to see me was yourself. Robert came in unexpectedly. A chair or something fell over in the room. He forced his way in, and he discovered her. We had a terrible scene. I still thought it was you. He left me in anger. At the end of everything, Mrs. Cheveley got possession of your letter. She stole it. When or how, I don't know.
At what hour did this happen?
At 10:30. And now I propose that we tell Robert the whole thing at once.
Looking at him with amazement that is almost terror.
You want me to tell Robert that the woman you expected was not Mrs. Cheveley, but myself? That it was I whom you thought was concealed in a room in your house at 10:30 at night? You want me to tell him that?
I think it is better that he should know the exact truth.
Rising.
Oh, I couldn't! I couldn't!
May I do it?
No!
Gravely.
You are wrong, Lady Chiltern.
No, the letter must be intercepted. That is all. But how can I do it? Letters arrive for him every moment of the day. His secretaries open them and hand them to him. I dare not ask the servants to bring me his letters. It would be impossible. Oh, why don't you tell me what to do?
Pray be calm, Lady Chiltern, and answer the questions I am going to put to you. You said his secretaries open his letters.
Yes.
Who is with him today? Mr. Trafford, isn't it?
No, Mr. Montford, I think.
You can trust him?
With a gesture of despair.
Oh, how do I know?
He would do what you asked him, wouldn't he?
I think so.
Your letter was on pink paper. He could recognize it without reading it, couldn't he, by the color?
I suppose so.
Is he in the house now?
Yes.
Then I will go and see him myself, and tell him that a certain letter written on pink paper is to be forwarded to Robert today, and that at all costs it must not reach him.
Goes to the door and opens it.
Oh! Robert is coming upstairs with the letter in his hand. It has reached him already.
With a cry of pain.
Oh! You have saved his life! What have you done with mine?
Enter Sir Robert Chiltern. He has the letter in his hand and is reading it. He comes towards his wife, not noticing Lord Goring's presence.
I want you. I trust you. I am coming to you, Gertrude. Oh, my love, is this true? Do you indeed trust me and want me? If so, it was for me to come to you, not for you to write of coming to me. This letter of yours, Gertrude, makes me feel that nothing that the world may do can hurt me now. You want me, Gertrude.
Lord Goring, unseen by Sir Robert Chiltern, makes an imploring sign to Lady Chiltern to accept the situation and Sir Robert's error.
Yes.
You trust me, Gertrude?
Yes.
Ah, oh, why did you not add that you loved me?
Taking his hand.
Because I love you.
Lord Goring passes into the conservatory. Kisses her.
Gertrude, you don't know what I feel. When Montford passed me your letter across the table, he had opened it by mistake, I suppose, without looking at the handwriting on the envelope, and I read it. Oh, I did not care what disgrace or punishment was in store for me. I only thought that you loved me still.
There is no disgrace in store for you, nor any public shame. Mrs. Cheveley has handed over to Lord Goring the document that was in her possession, and he has destroyed it.
Are you sure of this, Gertrude?
Yes, Lord Goring has just told me.
Then I am safe. Oh, what a wonderful thing to be safe. For 2 days I've been in terror. I am safe now. How did Arthur destroy my letter? Tell me.
He burned it.
I wish I had seen that one sin of my youth burning to ashes. How many men there are in modern life who would like to see their past burning to white ashes before them. Is Arthur still here?
Yes. He is in the conservatory.
I'm so glad now I made that speech last night in the House. So glad. I made it thinking that public disgrace might be the result, but it has not been so.
Public honour has been the result.
I think so. I fear so, almost. For although I am safe from detection, although every proof against me is destroyed, I suppose, Gertrude, I suppose I should retire from public life.
He looks anxiously at his wife. Eagerly.
Oh, yes, Robert, you should do that. It is your duty to do that.
It is much to surrender.
No, it will be much to gain.
Sir Robert Chiltern walks up and down the room with a troubled expression, then comes over to his wife and puts his hand on her shoulder.
And you would be happy living somewhere alone with me? Abroad, perhaps? Or in the country, away from London, away from public life? You would have no regrets?
Oh, none, Robert.
Sadly.
And your ambition for me? You used to be so ambitious for me.
Oh, my ambition! I have none now, but that we two may love each other. It was your ambition that led you astray. Let us not talk about ambition.
Lord Goring returns from the conservatory looking very pleased with himself, and with an entirely new buttonhole that someone has made for him. Going towards him.
Arthur, I have to thank you for what you have done for me. I don't know how I can repay you.
Shakes hands with him.
My dear fellow, I'll tell you at once. At the present moment, under the usual palm tree, I mean, in the conservatory.
Enter Mason.
Lord Caversham.
That admirable father of mine really makes a habit of turning up at the wrong moment. It is very heartless of him, very heartless indeed.
Enter Lord Caversham. Mason goes out.
Good morning, Lady Chiltern. Warmest congratulations to you, Chiltern, on your brilliant speech last night. I have just left the Prime Minister, and you are to have the vacant seat in the Cabinet.
With a look of joy and triumph.
A seat in the Cabinet?
Yes, here is the Prime Minister's letter.
Hands letter. Takes letter and reads it.
A seat in the Cabinet?
Certainly, and you well deserve it too. You have got what we want so much in political life nowadays. High character, high moral tone, high principles.
To Lord Goring.
Everything that you have not got, sir, and never will have.
I don't like principles, Father. I prefer prejudices.
Sir Robert Chiltern is on the brink of accepting the Prime Minister's offer when he sees his wife looking at him with her clear, candid eyes. He then realizes that it is impossible.
I cannot accept this offer, Lord Caversham. I have made up my mind to decline it.
Decline it, sir?
My intention is to retire at once from public life.
Angrily.
Decline a seat in the Cabinet and retire from public life? I have never heard such damned nonsense in the whole course of my existence. I beg your pardon, Lady Chiltern. Chiltern, I beg your pardon.
To Lord Goring.
Don't grin like that, sir.
No, Father.
Lady Chiltern, you are a sensible woman. The most sensible woman in London. The most sensible woman I know. Would you kindly prevent your husband from making such a... from taking such... Would you kindly do that, Lady Chiltern?
I think my husband is right in his determination, Lord Caversham. I approve of it.
You approve of it? Good heavens!
Taking her husband's hand.
I admire him for it. I admire him immensely for it. I have never admired him so much before. He is finer than even I thought him.
To Sir Robert Chiltern.
You will go and write your letter to the Prime Minister now, won't you? Don't hesitate about it, Robert.
With a touch of bitterness.
I suppose I had better write it at once. Such offers are not repeated. I will ask you to excuse me for a moment, Lord Caversham.
I may come with you, Robert, may I not?
Yes, Gertrude.
Lady Chiltern goes out with him.
What is the matter with this family? Something wrong here, eh?
Tapping his forehead.
Idiocy? Hereditary, I suppose. Both of them, too. Wife as well as husband. Very sad. Very sad indeed. And they're not an old family. Can't understand it.
It is not idiocy, Father, I assure you.
What is it then, sir?
After some hesitation.
Well, it is what is called nowadays a high moral tone, Father. That is all.
Hate these new-fangled names. Same thing we used to call idiocy 50 years ago. Shan't stay in this house any longer.
Taking his arm.
Oh, just go in here for a moment, Father. Third palm tree to the left, the usual palm tree.
What, sir?
I beg your pardon, Father, I forgot. The conservatory, Father, the conservatory. There is someone there I want you to talk to.
What about, sir?
About me, Father.
Grimly.
Not a subject on which much eloquence is possible.
No, Father, but the lady is like me. She doesn't care much for eloquence in others. She thinks it a little loud.
Lord Caversham goes out into the conservatory. Lady Chiltern enters.
Lady Chiltern, why are you playing Mrs. Cheveley's cards?
Startled.
I don't understand you.
Mrs. Cheveley made an attempt to ruin your husband, either to drive him from public life or to make him adopt a dishonorable position. From the latter tragedy, you saved him. The former you are now thrusting on him. Why should you do him the wrong Mrs. Cheveley tried to do and failed?
Lord Goring?
Pulling himself together for a great effort and showing the philosopher that underlies the dandy.
Lady Chiltern, allow me. You wrote me a letter last night, in which you said you trusted me and wanted my help. Now is the moment when you really want my help. Now is the time when you have got to trust me, to trust in my counsel and judgment. You love Robert. Do you want to kill his love for you? What sort of existence will he have if you rob him of the fruits of his ambition, if you take him from the splendor of a great political career, if you close the doors of public life against him, if you condemn him to sterile failure, he who was made for triumphant success? Women are not meant to judge us, but to forgive us when we need forgiveness. Pardon, not punishment, is their mission. Why should you scourge him with rods for his sin done in his youth, before he knew you, before he knew himself? A man's life is of more value than a woman's. It has larger issues, a wider scope, greater ambitions. A woman's life revolves in curves of emotions. It is upon lines of intellect that a man's life progresses. Don't make any terrible mistake now, Lady Chiltern. A woman who can keep a man's love and love him in return has done all the world wants of women, or should want of them.
Troubled and hesitating.
But it is my husband himself who wishes to retire from public life. He feels it is his duty. It was he who first said so.
Rather than lose your love, Robert would do anything. Wreck his whole career, as he is on the brink of doing now. He is making for you a terrible sacrifice. Take my advice, Lady Chiltern, and do not accept a sacrifice so great. If you do, you will live to repent it bitterly. We men and women are not made to accept such sacrifices from each other. We are not worthy of them. Besides, Robert has been punished enough.
We have both been punished. I set him up too high.
With deep feeling in his voice.
Do not for that reason set him down now too low. If he has fallen from his altar, do not thrust him into the mire. Failure to Robert would be the very mire of shame. Power is his passion. He would lose everything, even his power to feel love. Your husband's life is at this moment in your hands. Your husband's love is in your hands. Don't mar both for him.
Enter Sir Robert Chilton.
Gertrude, here is the draft of my letter. Shall I read it to you?
Let me see it.
Sir Robert hands her the letter. She reads it, and then, with a gesture of passion, tears it up.
What are you doing?
A man's life is of more value than a woman's. It has larger issues, wider scope, greater ambitions. Our lives revolve in curves of emotion. It is upon lines of intellect that a man's life progresses. I have just learnt this, and much else with it, from Lord Goring. And I will not spoil your life for you, nor see you spoil it as a sacrifice to me, a useless sacrifice.
Gertrude, Gertrude!
You can forget. Men easily forget. And I forgive. That is how women help the world. I see that now.
Deeply overcome by emotion, embraces her.
My wife, my wife!
To Lord Goring.
Arthur, it seems that I am always to be in your debt.
Oh, dear, no, Robert. Your debt is to Lady Chiltern, not to me.
I owe you much. And now tell me, what were you going to ask me just now as Lord Caversham came in?
Robert, you are your sister's guardian, and I want your consent to my marriage with her. That is all.
Oh, I am so glad. I am so glad.
Shakes hands with Lord Goring.
Thank you, Lady Chiltern.
With a troubled look.
My sister to be your wife?
Yes.
Speaking with great firmness.
Arthur, I'm very sorry, but the thing is quite out of the question. I have to think of Mabel's future happiness, and I don't think her happiness would be safe in your hands. And I cannot have her sacrificed.
Sacrificed?
Yes, utterly sacrificed. Loveless marriages are horrible, but there is one thing worse than an absolutely loveless marriage. A marriage in which there is love, but on one side only. Faith, but on one side only. Devotion, but on one side only. And in which, of the two hearts, one is sure to be broken.
But I love Mabel. No other woman has any place in my life.
Robert, if they love each other, why should they not be married?
Arthur cannot bring Mabel the love that she deserves.
What reason have you for saying that?
After a pause.
Do you really require me to tell you?
Certainly I do.
As you choose. When I called on you yesterday evening, I found Mrs. Cheeveley concealed in your rooms. It was between 10 and 11 o'clock at night. I do not wish to say anything more. Your relations with Mrs. Cheeveley have, as I said to you last night, nothing whatsoever to do with me. I know you were engaged to be married to her once. The fascination she exercised over you then seems to have returned. You spoke to me last night of her as of a woman pure and stainless, a woman whom you respected and honoured. That may be so, but I cannot give my sister's life into your hands. It would be wrong of me. It would be unjust, infamously unjust to her.
I have nothing more to say.
Robert, it was not Mrs. Cheeveley whom Lord Goring expected last night.
Not Mrs. Cheeveley? Who was it, then?
Lady Chiltern.
It was your own wife. Robert, yesterday afternoon Lord Goring told me that if ever I was in trouble I could come to him for help, as he was our oldest and best friend. Later on, after that terrible scene in this room, I wrote to him telling him that I trusted him, that I had need of him, that I was coming to him for help and advice.
Sir Robert Chiltern takes the letter out of his pocket.
Yes, that letter. I didn't go to Lord Goring's after all. I felt that it is from ourselves alone that help can come. Pride made me think that. Mrs. Cheeveley went. She stole my letter and sent it anonymously to you this morning, that you should think. Oh, Robert, I cannot tell you what she wished you to think.
What? Had I fallen so low in your eyes that you thought that even for a moment I could have doubted your goodness? Gertrude, Gertrude, you are to me the white image of all good things, and sin can never touch you. Arthur, you can go to Mabel, and you have my best wishes. Oh, stop for a moment. There is no name at the beginning of this letter. The brilliant Mrs. Cheeveley does not seem to have noticed that. There should be a name.
Let me write yours. It is you I trust in need, you and none else.
Well, really, Lady Chiltern, I think I should have back my own letter.
Smiling.
No, you shall have Mabel.
Takes the letter and writes her husband's name on it.
Well, I hope she hasn't changed her mind. It's nearly 20 minutes since I saw her last.
Enter Mabel Chiltern and Lord Caversham.
Lord Goring, I think your father's conversation much more improving than yours. I am only going to talk to Lord Caversham in the future, and always under the usual palm tree.
Darling!
Kisses her, considerably taken aback.
What does this mean, sir? You don't mean to say that this charming, clever young lady has been so foolish as to accept you?
Certainly, father. And Chiltern's been wise enough to accept the seat in the cabinet.
I am very glad to hear that, Chiltern. I congratulate you, sir. If this country doesn't go to the dogs or the radicals, we shall have you as Prime Minister some day.
Enter Mason.
Luncheon is on the table, m'lady.
Mason goes out.
You'll stop to luncheon, Lord Caversham, won't you?
With pleasure. And I'll drive you down to Downing Street afterwards, Chiltern. You have a great future before you. A great future. Wish I could say the same for you, sir.
To Lord Goring.
But your career will have to be entirely domestic.
Yes, father. I prefer it domestic.
And if you don't make this young lady an ideal husband, I'll cut you off with a shilling.
An ideal husband? Oh, I don't think I should like that. It sounds like something in the next world.
What do you want him to be then, dear?
He can be what he chooses. All I want is to be a real wife to him.
Upon my word, there is a good deal of common sense in that, Lady Chiltern.
They all go out except Sir Robert Chiltern. He sinks in a chair, wrapped in thought. After a little time, Lady Chiltern returns the look for him. Leaning over the back of the chair.
Aren't you coming in, Robert?
Taking her hand.
Gertrude, is it love you feel for me, or is it pity merely?
Kisses him.
It is love, Robert. Love and only love. For both of us a new life is beginning.
Curtain. End of Act 4. End of An Ideal Husband by Oscar Wilde. You have been listening to Alex Foster reading The Narrator, Linton reading The Earl of Caversham, K.G., John Gonzalez reading Viscount Goring, his son. Sir Robert Chiltern, Baronet, Under Secretary for Foreign Affairs, was read by David Barnes. The Vicomte de Nonjac was read by Juho Frogid. Mr. Montford, Matthew Walton. Mason, butler to Sir Robert Chiltern, by Hugh Maguire. Phipps, Lord Goring's servants, by Raisel. James, the footman, by Chris Gorringe. Harold, the footman, by Zachary Brewster Geis. Lady Chiltern, by Kristen Hughes. Lady Markby, by Heather Bennett. The Countess of Basildon, by Gemma Blythe. Mrs. Marchmont, by Ezwa. Mrs. Mabel Chiltern, Sir Robert Chiltern's sister, by Anita Roy Dobbs. Mrs. Cheeveley, Betsy Bush. The editor was Paula Berenstain. This has been a LibriVox production and is in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer yourself, please see LibriVox.org. An Ideal Husband by Oscar Wilde.